Welcome back to the Backstreet Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Squires, and I'm here with my co-host, Michael McKnight. How are you?
Tamego mai, August to hen.
I've
Danny.
got nothing. I've got nothing.
A friend of mine who's an Irish speaker suggested to me that now that you're living in Ireland for a while, that we could broaden your cultural horizons. So, Donal, if you're listening, you're welcome. So, Danny, I just said basically, I'm good. How are you?
Okay. I don't know the appropriate response, but yeah, I'm actually be kind of interested to learn a bit of Irish. So yeah, that's not a bad shout actually. Can complement my Swedish.
And you see, people will tune in here wanting to hear about athletics, and they're going to learn so much more.
Yeah, let's just turn this
God.
into like a language podcast.
Anyway, I think we're better sticking to what we know about. So, look, yeah, busy episode tonight, I think.
Yeah, busy, busy one. We've got a few guests that are joining us. Do you want to sort of take us through what's going on in episode 15?
Yeah, well, our virtual running gazebo, I thought that was a nice metaphor because when you go to races, you see all these like little tents, a little kingdom of encampment or whatever for a running club. So we've got a virtual Backstreet running gazebo, and we're going to be joined later in it by Masters Maestro, Conor Curran. Apologies for a bit of gratuitous alliteration there, along with his North Belfast teammate, John Black. John is also the director of the North Belfast Festival of 5000s, and he's going to be talking to us all about that. But before that, we're going to review some recent results, including the Omagh Half Marathon, the Larne 10 Miles, and the Irish Unis Track and Field, which were hosted at the Mary Peters Track. And I think, Danny, from a marathon perspective, you've some things.
Yeah, I mean, there were some pretty big performances over in Manchester just Sunday past. We're actually recording on Monday here. So yeah, it was yesterday, so some big performances. And yeah, London Marathon is only 6 days away. So yeah, looking forward to that and yeah, getting ready to do the big dance. I was gonna say actually, I just noticed that John Black has entered the chat. So maybe I'll let him in here and we can
John Black's in
surprise
the
him.
house. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll let him in.
Hello.
John Black, sir, we're live. We're rolling. How you going?
Too bad. How are you?
And
Yeah,
we're
not
just
too
giving you
bad.
a big build up and everything, John, and you arrived. It's just perfect timing.
Oh, sorry. I always like to come early to these things to make sure my mic actually work.
Mate, it's a respectable attribute.
Yeah, we were just saying that the first part of the this episode, John, we're going to be reviewing some of the recent results. So I think we're going to kick off, and feel free to give us your tuppence worth. We're going to kick off with the Omagh Half, Danny. So what can you tell us about it?
Yep, so got a few results here. I mean, Omagh Half, as far as I'm aware, it's always gets a good, group of runners that are going down there and some pretty quick times. This year it was actually won by Gary Hegarty in 68:18. Second was your teammate John Conan McCaughey in 68:29. The third was Michael Fox in 69:10. First woman across the line was Anne Marie McGlynn. I feel like she wins almost every half marathon in Ireland and Northern Ireland. She ran 75:26. And then Dervla Cox was second in 80 minutes, 59 seconds. And Jennifer Martin in third, 84:22. Any comments there, John? How did you think the race went for your teammate, Conan?
The weather in Firstly was absolutely horrific. I can't imagine running in that weather. That course isn't flat either. It's fast, but it rolls. You're out in the country for a lot of the time. So, major respect for the people who actually ran it that day, because God, even the slow Sunday runs were a drag that day.
Are those times reflective of a good day, or what's the sort of times you usually see down there at Omagh?
Oh, there's much quicker times. I think Stephen Scotland's got a 64-minute around there at one point.
Okay.
So it is a fast course, and you run that slow. So no, I think those boys would have been well down on their usuals.
Yeah, it's interesting because Gary Hegarty has entered in Belfast Marathon, and we're going to talk about it probably next week, do a special, drop a special episode about that. But I think he is a serious contender because he's in good shape, and he's a very, tends to be quite an aggressive runner as well. So he'll be obviously somebody to watch in that one. The same weekend, Danny, it was the Irish University's track and field. Feels really, really early in the season for a track meet. But I guess with exams and things for universities, this is the time frame. So University of Ulster hosted it, and you know, there were some pretty good performances. So Queen's duo of Hannah Gilliland, Callum Morgan, both took gold. Hannah 5,000, Callum 1,500. Adele Monaghan, who's from, I think, Enniskillen originally, but is in Dublin at college, she won the 3,000. Finn Valley's Amy Green, another Northern athlete, running for DCU, took the steeplechase. For the distance guys, the conditions were really blustery, so times weren't amazing. Rachel McCann, from Queens, however, took silver in the 400 in a big PB of 54.01. And I know our coach, Mike Roberts, so he was smiling like a Cheshire cat, so really enjoyed it. But I mean, it was lovely seeing. I was just out for a walk one day and happened upon it, but it was great to see, you know, all the track suits of the universities from Cork, from Limerick, from Galway, from Dublin, you know, and to see that university athletics is live and well, you know. Also
I'm kind
struck
of
me as well.
interested.
Sorry, pardon?
I was just gonna pipe up there and ask, Rachel McCann, if she's running 54 seconds over a 400, how does that translate to an 800? Do you know?
It depends on the athlete. If an athlete had a really good kind of, you know, aerobic ability, one would imagine that they could run a really good 800. But often, a lot of the 400 runners who are, you know, more speed based, they really struggle. So, a really good example would be somebody like DeFisher Patterson, who was a really top class. She ran for Beechmont. She ran 52. I think finished fourth in the European Juniors under 20s. And runs about 2.7, 2.8 for 800, which by comparison is pretty poor. So it doesn't always follow, yeah.
Okay. Any comments from you, John?
It passed me by as well. Omo kind of took center stage for me there. I think we might have stolen their date. I think they would have liked to have been running the day we were running. Mary Pierce was busy, so it was.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
was looking at the calendar for the next few weeks, and even getting space on the track on a Saturday for sessions looks really, really tough. A lot of the schools, because we're getting in also, Danny, at this time of year, we have schools athletics really kicks into gear with the county, what we call the district championships. And there's huge pressure on the Mary Peters track this year because the Antrim track is closed. So a lot of meets will have to happen in Belfast, and it's going to lead to a lot of congestion. But anyway, this weekend we had a couple of events. Big one locally was the Larne 10 miles. And the winner was Eddie McGinley in 53.12 ahead of Chris Madden, 54.28. Jordan Heron, I think from the home club, 55.23. First woman was Claire McGuigan, 60.47, who was a long way ahead of the runner-up, Elisora Crawford. But the story of that race was the re-emergence of Ed McGinley, who for a while, I guess, in the noughties, was the big dog locally. He's a former national cross-country champion, really good runner, really good guy. I messaged him just saying, "You're a dark horse," and he said, "It's great to be running pain-free." So yeah, I think he's a 40 master now, but if Ed got back into the swing and started racing, you know, he certainly, not just at master's level, he could be a real factor again. What do you reckon, John? You obviously
Yeah.
have known him from the back in the day.
Yeah, I remember many times like the Larne Half Marathon, so it was kind of an out and back, and Ed would be coming back down the road as you're heading up it. Yeah, Ed was certainly in his peak towards the end of our 2 or 3 years ago, whenever, or a bit longer than that now. But yeah, he was always top dog here locally, anyway, that was sure. Like he's like it's 8:13, and this is all pre-shoes as well. That's the thing about Ed,
Yeah.
is when he was running all these times years ago without the shoes, which is amazing. Yeah, as a V4, right, that's great to see him back. It was really, we were always kind of probing to see what was he doing, because we'd see him on runs, you'd never know what he was up to, but it's good to see he's
Yeah,
back.
he won, I think, the cracker, not the crack. He won a 10K a few years ago in West Belfast, but I think he was running incognito. Because I talked to him a couple of years ago about coming and running for Striders again and Masters and things, but he wasn't that keen. But I know he's been training with the Roadrunners guys, Danny, and Noel was just saying how, you know, that he was in good shape. And there is also a rumor that he may be turning out in Belfast. And again, he could absolutely be a factor in terms of the local shakeup.
He won that one year, didn't he? Or his first local, certainly.
I mean, I think the Lauren course is pretty good, but I think it was probably blustery enough. So, you know, I don't know how a 53 translates to the marathon, but it seems that he's been training well and has maybe got the bug again. So let's just wait and see.
John, as a masters athlete over at North Belfast, does that put chills down your spine, thinking you might join Annandale again?
Certainly scary. All right. I don't know if Ed did. I don't recall him doing very much cross country. About maybe, but I don't recall him towards the late the you know his back half of him doing it. So we're maybe safe there. If he sticks to the roads, he's fine. Yeah, stick to the roads, Ed.
Danny,
Well, look,
so
I was just going to
before
say,
we before we yeah.
I was going to say, Connor Curran's just joined the chat as well. Should we let him in?
Yeah. Do we if we have to, we will.
Yeah. We'll bring him in. He can pick up on our chat about Manchester Marathon. I
Well,
think
just before Danny, we go there, I just want to give a shout out to a really hardworking runner who deserves a lot of credit. So, Leo McSweeney got a big PB in Lauren of 58:40. So, I want to give him a shout out for that because Leo is in the group, works really, really hard. And for anybody who works hard, gets a PB, they deserve a pat on the back. So, well done, man. Keep it going.
Definitely. Connor, Earth to Connor, can you hear us? Nope, he's not quite with us yet. I reckon once he joins the audio, then we'll be on. Should we talk a little bit about Manchester Marathon? I mean, the results are very hard to sort of figure out. They've got like half the results are the elite field, which is sort of anyone from the winner who was Adam Clark, who won in 2 hours 16. All the way up to people who are running like past 3 hours for the marathon. So it's kind of hard to figure out the results. But yeah, as I mentioned, Adam Clark, he got the win in 2 hours 16, and the female winner was Charlie Arnell in 2:37. From a local perspective, and John slash Connor, let me know if there's any North Belfast guys in there. Local perspective, it was a big showing by Roadrunners AC. I know that they targeted this race and they had probably 15 plus athletes over there. Noel McNally, he went round in 2 hours 33 minutes, which was good enough for 16th in the non-elite field, but he definitely beat a lot of those elite field runners. Caitlin Harvey, she also had a fantastic run. She took about 90 seconds off her PB from Dublin. She ran 2 hours 44:23, and that was good enough for fourth place overall. So hopefully a bit of prize money. And I guess, you know, my perspective is that really the sky's the limit for Caitlin. She's, you know, she's top class athlete, and I think she's got a lot of strength. And I hope to see her winning some of these local-ish marathons one day. A couple of others, Jack Sinclair from Roadrunners, he ran a big PB of 2:39, and another friend of mine, Paddy McColl, he ran 2:41. Annandale Strider, Kieran McKendry, he was rapid through halfway and then finished in 2 hours 44. So shout out to Kieran. I think he battled in that second half pretty hard, but yeah, always good to be humbled a little bit by the marathon, but still pull it off. So yeah, good to see. Another interesting story from Manchester is Mick Conlon. He's only sort of popped up on my radar in the past like 2 or 3 months. This Irish professional boxer. He's turned to the roads. He's been running for Roadrunners, being trained by Noel McNally. He ran 2 hours 55, and yeah, just goes to show a bit of boxing fitness translates to some running fitness, obviously. So maybe we all need to start hitting the bag once a week. Could help.
Yeah, I mean, I was chatting to somebody from Roadrunners. It might have even been Noel at the track last week, and Michael Conlon had heard about another boxer who'd run 2:53, and he was hell bent on running really close to it. And the guys were worried that it would blow up and run about 3:20. So I don't know whether he just hung on or wisdom prevailed, but that's a pretty good run. But you know, if you go back a little bit, Alan McCulloch was a brilliant marathon runner. His brother was a top-class boxer. Wayne McCulloch, and I remember hearing about Wayne used to train with the athletes when he was in the Commonwealth Games, and again could have been a really capable runner. So there is a obviously an innate ability for a lot of boxers, particularly the lighter guys, who will do a lot of road work as part of their training, so they can step across pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'll have to
Just
do
trying
some
to.
furious editing here to get Connor back in.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out. He sent me a message here. He's having a bit of trouble with the video, but he says he can hear us and he can talk to us. Maybe that's a save for us. Can you hear us, Connor?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep, absolutely. Welcome to the Backstreet Podcast, episode 15. Really glad to have you both. I think we've got some really cool things to chat about with regards to the North Belfast Harriers afternoon of 5,000s, which is this weekend. But first, we've got to ask you, Connor, a bit about your European adventure. Can you talk us through it?
As in the European Masters, Dan, yeah.
That's the one, unless you're on a holiday recently as well. I don't know.
Yeah, and I heard a news flash. It was the track event in which you didn't fall over.
Oh, you're funny. You're funny. I've had 12 months of this crap, Michael.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of the only reason I went out is just to get that monkey off my back. And John Black is like the guy in the club who constantly reminds you of all your failures. So
Well, you always need one.
Well, there's more than one, unfortunately, in North Belfast, but he's the main protagonist. But
I drew him a wee diagram of where he could fall and where he couldn't fall. You know, he's like fall after the line, not before.
and he's not actually joking. He actually did draw a diagram of areas in which I could fall and couldn't fall. So between him and Mark Malone and Gerard Heaney, I've had this support crew for the last 12 months, sort of reminding me that a race isn't over until you're actually across the line. So it was good to get back to Turin and get back to the European Championships and sort of salvage a wee bit of pride, really. So they were held in March, and it was 4 weeks ago now, so I've just about recovered, I think.
So what did you run, Connor? Were you 1500 or 8?
Yeah, so I did the 800 and the
Okay.
1500, so four races in 4 days. I flew out on the Monday. It was held between the 16th and the 23rd of March in Turin, in Poland. So four races in 4 days. The 800 heat was the Tuesday, then the 800 final, followed the next morning by the 1500 heat on the Friday, and then the 1500 final on the Saturday. So it's a fairly sort of exhausting week. I know you're not running a huge amount, but you know, but when you add in all the time that, you know, it takes to, you know, get to the stadium, go to the call room, warm up, warm down, and then just psychologically to get yourself up for each race, it is pretty exhausting. And you've got lots of rules and regulations when you go to these things, guys, as well. So like I didn't appreciate until just after the 1500 meter final that I'd actually touched the line, the inside line of the track twice with my left foot. So I had actually two warnings against my name for infringements, and I actually didn't know there was such a thing as an infringement over there. So you go to these events and you get thrown into an environment where there's all sorts of rules and regulations in terms of check-in and call-in and warm-up and warm-down, and it is pretty exhausting. So I was glad to come away with something.
And so tell you meddled.
Yeah, so I was fourth in the 800, and I missed a medal by half a second in the 800, around 2:03. So I was fairly annoyed about that. The three guys that beat me were all, I suppose, much faster on paper. Kodjo Tremmer, he's a British guy. I don't know if anyone knows him. He runs for Highgate, I think. He ran a 1:58 about 2 weeks before. He's a 404 guy. He ran 30:50 in the Valencia 10K as well. He's a 14:35,000 guy. So
So no
I, you know,
weaknesses.
no weaknesses, Michael. Like, you know, when someone's got that speed and endurance, like
Yeah.
there's very few chinks in his armor. The guy Berrente, then the Spanish guy, ran 51.2 in the 400 that week.
Wow.
Yeah, so like he had all the speed. And then a new guy, an Italian guy called Natalucci, came on the scene, and he's more like a 4:08 guy. So he'd done like 52:03 that week. So I, you know, tactically, I just didn't have tactically, and I suppose in my toolkit. I didn't have, you know, anything to try and get up against them with. But in the 1500, I got a silver medal against the same three guys.
Oh, well done! Yeah,
and beat the guy who won the World Championships last year as well. So,
oh wow!
To beat Berente, I beat Berente in the last sort of 3 or 4 meters, to take the silver, and I ran 4:05.91, I think, which was a new Irish record. So, came away with a medal and a record, which I was delighted with.
And does that go some way to dispelling the ghosts from last year?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I just wanted a medal, but to come away with a time, like a really good time, like 4:05. The record was held by Mark O'Shea, and I kind of left thinking, Jesus, that, I mean, if I don't do anything else this summer, like, I'm just happy with a medal and running 4:05 indoors at 49. So, yeah,
there's lots of people would just retire now on this high, but. And
yeah,
what about Davy Clark was there as well?
Yeah, Davy Clark has just, like, you know, a drawer full of these medals. Apparently he doesn't hang them up anywhere. He just sticks them in a drawer, whereas I tend to show them off to the postman, the Amazon man, the Deliveroo guy, Uber taxis, phone a cab, value cab. Anyone who comes to our door gets shown the medals. So, Davy Clark has a drawer full of these medals, including World Championship goals and European medals. I think he picked up three this time, two silvers and a bronze over 8:15 and 3. So, yeah, he's walking around like Mr. T, and I'm walking around like a kid at sports day, you know.
No, so it's like a really good trip. And I guess, will you be turning out then at Eamon's meeting in a few weeks' time?
Yeah, I've had a few weeks of just sort of letting my hair down. John, I started training back last week, did a few sessions with John there. He's training quite hard for the 5000. So I sort of jumped back into less intensive training and doing just more tempos and stuff, just to get back in touch with a bit of base work and a bit of aerobic work. So I've lost a bit of speed, I think, but by the time Eamon's meeting comes around, I'll hopefully be fresh enough for a crack at the 15, and hopefully just get dragged around the back to a decent time. And there's not too many big track races this summer that really, you know, you can get good times at in Ireland. I'm just looking at the schedule. So I think this one and maybe the BMC Miler meet in June are probably going to be my two main focus for trying to get good times this year.
Yeah, I will watch with interest. You know, it's funny that I always think when Eamon's meet comes around, it's almost like summer started. And sometimes that's such a good meeting that everything afterwards feels kind of underwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Eamon always seems to get the good weather, so I'm hoping this absolute nightmare of a season that we're having at the minute is just going to disappear this weekend, and then it's going to herald the Eamon Christie weather coming in, and we can all enjoy a good warm track season. But yeah, no, Eamon's one's probably the highlight of the year.
And of course, there's your own meeting this weekend, which is kind of, we'll be talking about it in a little while, but it's become a really important meet as well, particularly for the guys who are running 5K and above. It's a really good, you know, place to get an early season marker, but we'll come back to that. So Danny, you're running London this weekend, and guys, I've got to share this story with you because it's I've been in athletics a long time, but I've never heard this before. So lots of marathon runners, Scullion went to Portugal, warm weather training. Kirky and the guys were over there. There were other marathon guys, warm weather training. Danny, tell the guys what you did.
Yeah, I just decided, you know, I'll sort of go against the grain a bit. And I went up to Northern Sweden for a week and did a bit of training while I was up there. It was absolutely freezing middle of the week. It was like around about minus 20. So yeah, that was the complete opposite of probably what's recommended. I got back from there and like, I really felt like I'd cooked my marathon, like my hamstrings and everything. I was like bent over because I'd been running so many hills and on snow. I was a bit worried. I'm starting to get a bit better. I actually got a massage by Marty Ray, and he sort of fixed me up a little bit. But then today, as I was riding to work, I slammed into the back of a car on my bike that pulled out in front of me. So I think I'm all good, but I've got a big bruise and a bag of peas on my leg right now. So I wouldn't say it's been an ideal, calm sort of lead up to London, but I'm looking forward to it. I've got a good group of guys that I know both from here and a couple over in London that are hoping for a similar time. So hopefully we can just link up and yeah, they can all just pace me to a really good PB and I'll just outkick them in the last, you know, K or so.
On the wider issue, we were talking to with Stephen Scullion recording an episode last night. We tried to do it last week, but it didn't happen. And I think, Danny, we're going to drop that episode maybe Friday night, just before a day or two out from the London Marathon. But turning to Stephen, who's obviously an athlete with ambitions to make the Olympic marathon. We were talking last night, guys, about just how unrealistic and onerous the qualification for the Olympics for the Irish team seems to be in terms of the time. Just seems to be really, really anti-athlete in some ways.
It's crazy. It's almost like they don't want to choose anybody.
Yeah.
They'd rather not send anyone.
You know, and you think of, you know, and even to go out, we kind of, I think Danny asked him, would he go for it? And I think he just wants to have a good run and sees where, you know, see where that takes him. Because to go out and chase a time like that, you could just completely cook your marathon really early.
I've stuck my hand up there because you can't see me.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure. Connor, come
I'm
in.
I'm not sure if you can see my raised hand. But it's funny because I was talking to someone there at the weekend. It's not even just the elites whose standards have raised. I mean, I think Boston and New York have come out and they're good for ages, have significantly changed over the last week or two as well. So whereas in the past, if you were maybe like a, say you were a 40-year-old and you need to run 3:10 at Boston, I think that shifted to something like 2:55. And I think New York's now 2:45 for good for age. So I think the whole super shoes thing, I was watching Boston earlier on actually. I think the whole super shoes thing has just like shifted everything northwards. So yeah, I mean these guys like Scullion are just gonna have to, you know, raise their game because 2:09, I mean you're gonna have women running 2:10 soon. You know, that's the way it's going. I mean, women are running 2:13 at the minute. So, you know, if a male elite can't run 2:09, well, I mean, question query, should you be going to the Olympics? Really?
Well, I would counter and say if you're a clean athlete, you know, it's we've talked about this before, Connor, and how, you know, the word incredible is used when considering a lot of current marathon performances for a reason. And, you know, the shoe thing is a thing, but I think also there's just so many stories coming out about doping and masking agents and everything else. That's, but it's a really tough time. You know, if you're, you know, a guy like Scullion, and I'm sure there's, you know, British athletes in the same position who have been knocking their pan in for the last few years, training really hard, doing everything they can, and suddenly you get hit with a target like this, which, as John says, is almost like, yeah, we don't really want to take you. It kind of feels to me it's almost against the spirit of the Olympics, which is about, you know, people from every nation coming and competing. You know, and yeah. if you lose that, what's the point?
I know what you mean.
Sorry, Connor. It's what it does for the boys behind as well. If you're looking at, you know, I think it's inspirational when you see people qualifying for the Olympics. You know, you have three Irish boys in Rio. The boys behind them get kind of enthused and look forward to it. And then what ends up happening is when no one goes, the next crop are looking and going, well, what do we do here? You know, where do we go?
Yeah, and you think of a few years ago, Breege Conley got to the Olympics. Yeah. So you're right, for lots of aspiring Irish athletes, you'll just go, yeah, what's the point? You got no chance. Yeah.
I was going to say, Scullion is more than capable of running 2:09. I mean, his London Marathon, when he ran, did he run 2:10, John? I can't remember. Was his PB 2:10?
2:09 he ran there.
2:09. I mean, that day he ran 2:09. It was horrific. I mean, the wind was coming in sideways. It was freezing cold. People were like peeling off with hypothermia. And he, like, it wasn't just that he ran 2:09 that day. He ran 2:09 in horrendous conditions. Stephen Scullion on a good day could run 2:07. I have no doubt. I mean, he ran 61 in Larne. If he's running 61 in Larne, he should be running 2:06, 2:07 in Seville. You know, he's that talented. And I, and you know, I'd love to see him do it. Don't get me wrong. I think it would put a lot of demons to bed if he turned up and smashed it. But I think he's more than capable of running 2.9. So I think there's other guys maybe that Kevin Seward, fourth in the Commonwealth Games, ran out of his skin that day. If he'd an injury free build up, I'd say he's knocking on the door of 2.10. So I don't think they're completely unattainable targets for these
There's
guys.
A point system as well, Connor, I think. And if Stephen gets a decent run in London, obviously he scored good points for Dublin. You know, whether or not that will be enough, I don't know exactly how it works, but I guess that's as much an approach as trying to get a qualifying time.
Yeah, yep. I think sort of how it works is they take, I think that the first 80 places are sort of a quota that is reserved for those who have run the qualifying standard, which is 208.10 for the men. And then the rest of the places, maybe the next 40 places or so, are made up of people who have maybe not run the standard, but they've run a couple of good marathons or half marathons. And then they've got the World Athletics points that allow them to qualify for the marathon. So look, I'll definitely plug the chat that we had with Scully. As Michael mentioned, we're going to release it on Friday. He says a lot of great stuff about the marathon. I was just sitting there like listening, taking it all in. So he definitely knows a lot about it. He's got a lot of wisdom in the event. And I think that, yeah, he could go about it two ways. He could try for that, the standard, and then blow up and have a bad one, and that's the end of it. Or he could sort of hopefully run a decent time and back up his performance from Dublin last year. And then maybe he has a shot at getting into the Olympics. So yeah, really looking forward to hearing how he goes post-race. I obviously won't be able to watch it, but I really recommend keeping a close eye on the women's field, because I really feel like the women's field in London this year is majorly impressive. It's got Tigist Assefa. She has the world record from Berlin to 11:40 or whatever it was. You've got Bridget Kosgei, who's the former world record holder. I mean, you've got, I think, like the three fastest female marathoners that are turning up to London. So that race in particular is going to be spectacular. I'm interested as well. Like, it feels like that men's marathon qualifying standard 208.10 is maybe out of touch with what the women's is. I think it's only 220, or not only 226, but you've got so many female athletes that have run quicker than 226. It's it seems like that's a bit softer than the men's one, so to speak. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Well, interestingly, the women weren't that fast today at Boston. Boston's obviously a hard course. So based on that, one would have said, yeah, it is realistic enough. You got to think also that the top women are kind of outliers of the men. That 2:11, I think, was the world record, was just insane and probably isn't reflective of, it's the rank and file of the elite women are probably a fair bit slower than that. But I would just like to see an Olympic marathon with people from everywhere and, good athletes who've worked hard getting a realistic shot. And the marathon previously was always about that.
Yes, absolutely. No, it's only 6 days away. So yeah, as you said, really, really looking forward to hopefully a good weather day, and hopefully it's a nice weather day here in Belfast as well. So maybe that sort of brings us quite nicely onto as big of a race, arguably, as London, the North Belfast Harriers afternoon of 5,000. So Connor, I keep calling you Karen. Maybe you want to chat to us a little bit about the race. Maybe we can kick you off with how long has this meet been going for?
You know, I had to look this up. It started 4 years ago. I actually couldn't tell you how long ago. It's that long.
You started it, John.
So it was myself and Seamus McCann probably started it 4 years ago in 2024. Its primary reason why it was started was because I wanted to break 15 minutes in the 5K, and I'm still chipping at it. the biggest worry for the future of this event is if I do break 15, I might not run it again next year. So it's in everyone's interest that I probably don't break 15, although I don't think you have any fear this year. It started in 2021, its first year, and then obviously COVID caught us whenever that was. It was primarily because we kind of noticed the calendar was a bit bare. The Irish Milers meets started to retract, or now there's only two of them now, I think, potentially Connor's the athletics calendar man, so he'll be able to answer these. But like athletics, are the Irish Miners meets have pulled away. Obviously, we've got Eamon's cracking it and we can't lose it. And so myself and James were kind of like, well, let's see what we can do here. We put on an event. And I kind of am biased towards the endurance events rather than the sprints, as I call them, the 1500 meters and things, long sprints. It was more of a case of trying to get one of those on. And I know, obviously, Amadeo put on the 3000 meter meet, which was another good kind of accoutrement to that thing. So, it was primarily just to try and basically rip off the Highgate Harriers event. There's no, I'm not going to beat around the bush. That's what the plan was. Let's try and replicate what they're doing. Do it as a 5000 meters. Obviously, 10000 meters is a pretty unapproachable distance for a lot of people, and spikes, myself included. So we thought 5000 meters would be a good kind of distance event to try it out. So yeah, it was just trying to, let's build this and let's kind of make it a kind of a quality event for the athletes primarily as well, if we can. So that was the onus behind it, and try and run fast times.
And who's your sponsor this year, or is it a collection of sponsors?
So we're actually carrying the sponsor over from the who carried and also went to Portugal for the team. So it's the Lagan Specialist Consulting Group. They've actually, you know, they've give us a pot of money for the prize money. So in most years we don't have sponsorship. We usually sometimes rabble together something, and you know, that's sometimes why we don't have prize money versus, you know, why we do. So it's Lagan Specialist Consulting Group have, you know, kindly given us the money for this. So our premise, we will never try and make profit on this race. And in fact, we've lost money the last 2 years we've done it. So you know, it'll all get plugged back in whatever way we can. You know, and we'd give every pound back if we could.
So John, we're just talking about the meet. In an event like this, if you're not measuring success by the amount of entry fees and things, and obviously if it was a big road race, that obviously, you know, does generate money, what is success?
I suppose for me, what I really want to see is, I want to, off this race, we give a chance for some of the athletes to run good times to then get into bigger meets. I think originally we had grand ideas about what we could do and how big we could make that. And I think we were brought down to earth pretty quickly with the realization that we're on an island at the edge of Europe that isn't really accessible, but they flights. So even getting some of the guys from the mainland to come over is difficult. So for me, you know, I want an event that's well run, that, you know, the athletes know is in the calendar every year and they can turn up and reliably get a solid quality meet. And you know, the real reward for us is seeing some of the people coming over and getting times they need. Some of the, there was a really good girls race a few years ago where there was, the times were cracking and there was Commonwealth standards were achieved and things like that. And then we had people like Nick running, you know, that's a highlight, you know, for me as well. That was one of his kind of breakthrough race for everyone, was like, who's Nick Griggs, you know? So like the idea would be like, I love it when the juniors enter the race and I want to see them do well and get qualification times, and we do everything we can to get for them. So for me, success is getting those guys what they need to take the next step forward in their careers, and obviously then giving our local guys a good shot as well.
Yeah, from a coaching perspective, I think it's really gratifying that, you know, you guys are putting on a meeting with those intentions, that it is about really, you know, giving local athletes and Irish athletes a chance to have a race that'll help them transition to the next stage. So for instance, I mean, I've been talking to one of the guys I coach about, if he gets a sub 15, he can then get into BMC races. Yeah. And without something like your meet, that just doesn't happen as easily. Mm-hmm. And for the guys who want to go to the next level, it's really imperative that they get into those meets, particularly across in the mainland UK.
I don't know if you saw the Stanford meet there recently, John, or the On Cloud meet up in California. It's the same sort of concept, where clubs or teams or training groups are taking this notion where you create an atmosphere at an event. I mean, when you watch the On Cloud stuff, when you see, and I've seen it at a few events in Australia this summer as well, where you allow the crowd to get onto the infield and run across, to stand on the inside of the track to cheer people on and get close to runners, take photographs, you know, video record them on your phone. I remember a couple of years ago, John and Shamie had all this, these notions about, you know, what Stone Roses songs they were going to play for what races, you know, what dance music they were going to play on the last lap just to get the tempo up. And, you know, reality kicks in and, you know, or you can't play that because, you know, if you stream that over YouTube, you'll have to pay royalties, you know. So there's a lot of stuff that John probably isn't even telling you about, that gets in the way of putting on a fully, you know, flame throwing, beer drinking crowd, you know, right on the infield kind of event that Highgate do so well. It's just not as easy as, you know, getting people down with a load of tins to stand in the infield. There's health and
guys,
safety.
You could just do it anyway. We won't tell anybody.
it's tricky, isn't it, John?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's idea factories out there everywhere. That's why I call these people who come up with these great ideas. But when it comes to reality of actually implementing and doing them, you know, it's different gravy altogether. And a lot of those things take absurd money as well. You know, if there's somebody out there who wants to throw, you know, £10,000 at me to push that meat to the next level, I'm willing to take it, and you know, I'll do it what you want. But until then, unfortunately, we're kind of limited by where we are.
And no live stream this year because it's obviously cost prohibitive.
Yeah, so the guys offer a great service, and we really do want to stream it. But the reality is that, you know, to get the quality of service that they provide, you know, it costs money. And so we've kind of tussled the idea, like, what does the live stream do for the athletes themselves? You know, what does it give them? And the answer is probably not very much. Maybe they can go back and watch it later on, and it's nice to have that, you know, for posterity there to look at those things. But you're mostly adhering, you know, giving it to the people who would watch it, and I'd love them to turn up rather than watch it on a live stream if I could.
Yeah.
And so, in regards to, we just weren't willing to run at a loss again, you know, this year. So we thought, well, look, if we've got the money, let's, you know, spend it back into the event for the athletes. You know, put it into Pacers, put it into, you know, things like that. The reality is that I would say there's no track meet in Ireland can afford to run live streaming on entry fees alone. That's just the reality of it. You know, it again, people think, oh, sure, it's just a phone and, you know, a camera. It is not. It's an absolute rigmarole, and those guys from Icedown do a cracking job of it. Really professional setup, and they deserve to be paid for what they do. You know, so, but it, and the unfortunate is track doesn't generate funds to pay for it. You know, so most people are running at a loss if they're using streaming services.
So, John, let's get into the racing. Danny, have you had a look at the entry list at all?
Yeah, I have actually. So maybe just talk us through how many races are happening on the day.
There are six. So there's one female and there are five males races.
Okay,
there's...
and what's the female race? So does that have a pacer like the top men's races?
Yeah, so there. So yes, so the women's race has Rebecca Rosser is pacing that at 16 minutes now. Emily Hire Kearney for our club's in the race. And obviously she's, you know, significantly faster than the next highest seed in the race. But Emily's gonna attack it herself. She's gonna go out and go after a time herself, which is brave. And it's gonna be really impressive to see if she can do it. So the pacer's gonna help the girls behind, and Emily's happy with that, so she is. So you know, we do our best to, whenever we see entries come in that look like, you know, anomalies, we'll let people know, you know, we don't want to catch anyone out, you know, and think, because again, we're trying to help the athlete. So we've let Emily knows the situation, and she's still happy enough to come out and hammer. And I think her partner's possibly running as well. So, and he's got a quick time too, but they're not too far apart. So there could be some bragging. It's going to be some bragging parts or rights there.
So Emily looks like a pretty strong favorite for the ladies race. Anybody else to look for?
Yeah, I mean, Megan Ryan would be one I would kind of keep an eye on for me. I think she's had a good year and had a good, while, on the rest of it now, we've had a few dropouts there. It was really hoping to see Avril Miller run, to be honest, she's a junior as well. So I kind of keep an eye on those. Unfortunately, she's dropped out. But yeah, it should be a good race. I think the women's race, it's always nice to have a full women's race. I think that's what I really like to see. I like to see the volume in the women's race. You know, like we every year we've come close to probably having the best 5,000 meters race for a dedicated women's in Ireland. I think even if you look at the Irish senior, some years we've had a better field than them, you know, so it definitely does seem to stand out. And obviously a few years ago, whenever the Commonwealth standards were being chased, we got, you know, a lot of ladies come across. Megan Keith was there, you know, a few other athletes come across, which was really good.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to justify, you know, not having a separate women's race when it's possible to do that, because, you know, our best local 5,000 meter runners don't get that many opportunities to learn the craft of running a 5,000 meters against good competition. So it just seems like a no-brainer to me.
Well, there's the reason why primarily why they're not mixed, because we get asked this every year, can we run with the men? And we've toyed with the idea of, you know, maybe allowing some of the ladies at the back of the race to run with the men, just because it would pull them on further, rather than a dedicated female race. But you invalidate all the women's times if you mix them. So anyone chasing a qualification time, if it's ran in a mixed race, it doesn't count for them. It actually doesn't count for that. I think it might also invalidate the men, but obviously not usually a problem. You know, just because the women wouldn't be in the A race of the men's, just the way it splits. So again, by splitting them out, it means that they have a dedicated shot of a qualifying time, and this race is World Athletics accredited, so you know this stands up as national records and things like that as well.
Okay, so you've got two a number of men's races, but the B race and the A race are both pretty high quality. So was it difficult this year, kind of splitting the field?
Yeah, and that's why we brought in a second pacer, I think, to kind of help people along there. You know, yeah, so the problem is we've obviously got road time. We're using road times, which, I mean, I think everyone should be in agreement that they don't translate with the shoes now. It's nearly impossible to compare the two of them, but, you know, sometimes it's the best we've got. Yeah, some athletes are pretty good, and we do our diligence and check what people have put down and make sure that, you know, they're in that shape to run. Now, Seamus McCann does most of the seed, and I've kind of removed myself from that situation. There's a bit of a conflict of interest with me doing it, given that I'd be in the, you know, in the race too. So for the most part, I step back. Seamus will maybe ask some questions, and I'll agree with him. But yeah, it is hard to split. A lot of the guys, you know, will email me and say, look, you know, I'm chasing this time. It's ambitious, but I think I can do it. And more often than not, we'll give them the opportunity to do it. You know, the last thing we want to do is, especially some of these junior runners who are maybe trying to qualify for some of the, you know, the European events that are coming up, or, you know, in previous are coming up. The last thing we want to do is put them in a B race that if they had been in the front, you know, the back end of the A race, they would have got the time. So that's where it becomes difficult. And we really do work with the athletes when they say to us, look, you know, I want to be in the A race. I'm willing to take the risk that I go off the back here. And, you know, we do that. Now, we understand that we're kind of maybe pushing somebody out of the A race that maybe should have been there. But most of the times when they tell us their target time, we kind of nearly guarantee they would get that anyway in the B race. And so that's why we brought Iskander in, you know, into pace the B race, because now everyone who said they want to hit a 14:40 time have no excuse, because there's a pacer in there to do it. And I would say that some of the guys at the back end of the A race may not actually hit that time, but most of them would want to be in the A race to get, you know, have that opportunity. You know, it's a, you know, go for bust, essentially, you know, approach to the A race sometimes.
And looking at the field in the A race, what do you reckon? Any thoughts on who the runners and riders are?
Yeah, so... I mean, obviously we've got Neilan Brani going again, which is good. It's a winner takes all situation. It'll be nice to see. I think the dark horse is Conor McLean, I think, to be honest. I think I'm hoping to see something great there. Not to put any pressure on the guy, but I would love to see him. And Jack Fenlon's another guy as well.
Yeah,
it would be my two shouts.
Jack Fenlon. I think Jack Fenlon could be a dark horse in this one. Barani and Neil have obviously had a bit of a battle between them on the roads at Queens and up in Coleraine, and Neil got the better of Barani in Coleraine. But I think Jack Fenlon or Cathal O'Reilly, they both had really good cross-country seasons, and they could be coming in pretty fresh to this. Don't think they've raced a huge amount over the roads, John, have they? Haven't seen.
It's so hard to find information on the guys in the south.
Yeah, yeah.
We're blessed with power of 10. You know, if some of the guys up here, they try and pull the wool over our eyes, we know very quickly. We can see it. You know, it's all there. But yeah, they would be.
Go on. It sort of feels very early season in terms of getting guys to run really fast. 14 feels pretty quick for this time of year.
Yeah, yeah. It makes it difficult to see, to be fair, because. You know, and if you're an astute athlete, you probably haven't raced very much this year. You maybe finished cross country, and maybe you didn't have an indoor season, and you know, it looks like a barren wasteland. We have no idea what you've been doing or how you've been racing. But for the most part, like, people just look at the seed list and go, God, he's chancing his arm there, isn't he? Most people are very truthful. You know, I've been quite impressed with people's abilities to tell what they think they do. Like, I've looked at previous years and compared what they said. And obviously there's a few, you know, stand out and maybe they just had bad days. But for the most part, people do kind of hit what they say they can do, you know, which is good.
And who's your pacer, John, in the A-race?
So we've got James Edgars doing that for us with the triathlete. Wow. So James has jumped in, thankfully, and he's going to carry that around. So, I mean, he's a little 14 man himself. You know, he's obviously, this is probably the biggest year of his life going for the Olympics. I understand he's just outside the window of the points total as well for it. So he's a high-class pacer, and hopefully he can take those guys as far as they can go. Just one other thing, like in terms of the seedings, sometimes like we want these races to be competitive as well. You know, so very often, you know, we'll see somebody at the back end of a race and think, God, wouldn't it be better if he was in the race below so that he gets a good race? You know, like we actually get these competitive finishes rather than a time trial. Like the worst thing we can have, and hopefully it doesn't happen, is somebody off the front of a race on his own. You know, that's a kind of sign that we've done something wrong. So, you know, sometimes we'll look at a race and go, look, you know, he probably could make the tail end of the B race, but like he will get a good race and possibly a win in the C race, you know, and that's what we want as well. You know, we want to give something, you know, good races. We just don't want to be this stream of people crossing a line one after the other.
And what we definitely don't want is any of the Australians winning every race, John. I mean, if there's any way in which we can, like, you know, work the season out to fix that, you know.
We have done very well at actually giving them that, to be honest. I think year we sit down, to be fair, in previous years, we have, and I'll expose Michael here, we've given Michael the preview and said, Michael, do you think your guys can do this, what they say they can do? And Michael helps us out and says, yeah, we think this is, you know, adjustable. So it's always good offloading the seeding decisions to the athlete's coach so that when the athlete questions it, we just say, oh, that was your coach said this, not us. So it's a good way.
I think they look pretty fair. You know, I mean, I think a lot of the races are really intriguing because you can see, I mean, I think the A race, it's hard enough to call. It depends on what kind of race. Danny, have you any favorites you think in that A race? People you think might come out on top?
Oh, I can't really pick any favorites. It's hard to go past Neil Johnston for the win. But there's plenty of fellas in that lineup that I hope have a good race. I'm interested to see a couple of PBs. Obviously, like Matthew Lavery's at the bottom of that A race with regards to seeding, but yeah, I'd imagine that he could run a lot quicker than his 15-18 seed time.
So I must interject there. This is the list as of like Saturday. And again, we reach out to athletes and if we know them. So like Matthew's actually had a bit of sickness. So now we've moved him down to the B race. So this is kind of a continual process, you know, this thing's happening.
Yeah.
So like, and we reach out to people constantly. If we think, look, where would you like to be? You know, there's a few guys we think span, we'll reach out to them, you know. So that's the process. You know, it's not this archaic, this is the way it is thing. You know, it is somewhat malleable. We are kind of strict. We do try and ensure that we submit a list to the track officials and that's it, final. We do not want to mess those guys about. They are under such pressure and such sort of resource that we don't like to mess them about. So
did you have to talk Kaha off the ledge of an A race entry and put him in the B? Or I'm sure he would have wanted a crack in the A.
Well, Seamus McCann is his coach, so fortunately Seamus McCann makes the call there. So Kaha knows where to forward his complaints if he has any issues.
Yeah, and Robbie Hagen in the B race. How do we think that's going to go?
He is now in the A race.
He's Robbie in the A. Okay. Up.
Yeah.
There you go. Maybe so, I do know guys. More than. Maybe I know
yeah,
more
yeah, you're,
than.
Yeah, you're catching on.
Yeah, I've seen a few here that. Yeah, no, it's very interesting. I think that, you know, as far as my knowledge of the people in these fields, I couldn't really pick who might win the B, but I just hope that everyone can just stick on the pacer in both races and have a good one. And then, yeah, it's a good start to the track season and for what's to come.
I think that B race might be a race between the two Lukes. I think Luke Kelly and Luke Dinsmore seems to be really maturing as a runner and has had a really good cross-country season. And just because I know Luke, because he used to train with us up at North Belfast, it's been brilliant seeing him grow at Candor into a really mature track athlete. And I think he ran a 4.04. He jogged a 4.04 1500 in the heats of the Irish Unis last week. And he got run out of the final a wee bit. But he had a brilliant run at Queen's 5K. And I think he's going to really have a breakthrough track season.
Yeah, I would probably edge it towards Luke because I think Luke Dinsmore probably has the gas.
Yeah, the kick.
If it's tactical. But, you know, Robbie Hagan could just run away from the guy. You know, it's intriguing because at least we can see a race there.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, Robbie's in the A, as John mentioned, but...
Oh, he's gone. He's gone, yeah.
So. I'm just watching now. So Seamus is actually working on this right now. So apologies, guys, for the out-of-date information. It looks now up in the A race now. So So
there you go.
he's making me a fool here, so it's, but I can see him frantically changing
all,
roles.
All bets are off.
Yeah.
What do we know?
But look, John Kelly,
Black's in the A race next minute.
I think there would be an uproar if that happened. Luke Kelly, I think, does have a very good chance in this race. I think he's going to be the one to watch.
Mm. Tell us, John, how are you going to break 15 in this race?
Probably performance enhancing drugs, I'd say. It's probably the only way that's going to happen. Eventually, I think this year is going to be the year. I'm putting money on myself to do it this year. After 3 years of absolute disasters of stress responses, I think things are going my way.
Yeah. Anything to chime in with there, Connor?
Yeah, I think he's in good nick. I've been watching him very closely the last few weeks. He had a good mile session last week, and him and I, we did a fairly good session last week, and I was spent at the end of it, and he just kept going just to showboat me. I was like, "Are you not stopping?" I was like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm good. I'm not even breathing hard. So, yeah, all the signs are that he's going to have a good debut. I think he'll break 15 this year, no doubt.
And obviously, no Andrew Milliken this time around.
No, Andrew's coming back from an injury, so he is. So, he's got quite a bad niggle this time, so he's on the road back now. So he is.
And do you think will he be able to have a track season? Do you think, or is it looking?
Andrew's a phenom, in my opinion. Like, you try to predict what he can and can't do, and he does these most amazing things. So I wouldn't be surprised if he could. I think it'll certainly be towards the latter of the year if he does. I've given up trying to predict what Andrew Milligan can and can't do, or when Andrew Milligan will get injured or will not perform well, because, you know, he's one of the realizations is either very quickly is that you're very mortal compared to people like him. If you know what I mean? Some people are blessed and some people aren't.
Yeah, he's a bit of a machine. And as I say, I think he's pretty mental. I don't know him well, but, you know, I have chatted to him before, and I think he's very kind of mentally strong kind of character. Yeah. So I don't think, you know, an injury would crush mere mortals. I think he'll just look at it as,
I can tell you, Andrew's probably cross-training more than anyone has ever cross-trained before. It's insane the volume of training he's doing cross-training. Let's hope it's not to a hindrance of this injury, but
he reminds me a wee bit of Pollock, because I was having a chat with him a while ago, and he was in the lead up to the Sealy, he was doing a lot of stuff on the bike because he couldn't run because of niggles, but he's just got that real
that is Andrew
determination.
I would concur with that.
Yeah, and Andre is a phenom. Like, I mean, Andre, you've seen it, Michael. You know, he was the gangly kid who wore the rugby socks and the baggy shorts to training for a number of years. A highly intelligent guy, really brilliant work ethic, but just ground his way to become, in the last 2 to 3 years, just an outstanding endurance athlete, and almost broke 4 minutes for the mile last year. And you wouldn't have said that if you'd looked at him when he was 14 years old. Like, there's no way that kid's going to do that. So he's got so much more to do in this sport, and I've no doubt that whatever this setback is, he'll get past it fairly quickly, and he'll start rewriting his own PBs and records. He's a really good guy. Like,
I think one thing it does show is that you can't predict what these boys are going to do. Like, looking at somebody at the age of 13 and 14 and trying to say what they're going to do. Because, I mean, Andrew didn't hit any kind of form till 17, 18.
Danny, you want to come in?
Yeah, just, I guess, for anyone listening, obviously this will be going out midweek. What time do the races kick off, and what can people expect at the meet? Is there a coffee van?
There is a coffee van, yes. That's about the height of the refreshments available. So the first race starts off at 12:45, so it does, and we go straight through, finishing with the women's race last at 2:50. So you're what there for, if my math is right, nearly 3 hours of athletics. Hopefully try and get it wrapped up quick, get the officials off the thing and back home. back-to-back races, really short intermissions in between, no fuss results on the board. We'll try and keep online results going up as well.
Yeah.
And keep you posted.
And from a spectator's point of view, I really feel like Mary Peters Track is a great spot to just hang out for a few hours. I personally love watching athletics, whether it's live or on the telly. So yeah, I reckon that's a good shout if anyone's looking to enjoy a few hours of live athletics.
The weather is supposed to be kind for us.
Weather looks good. Weather looks good. Yeah.
So Shamey will be out with his sort of Native American headdress and kind of beads and stuff dancing around the garden in Glengormley to make it all happen.
There's a division of duties. I generally take on all of the work before the race and then none on the day. So if there are any things that go wrong on the day, it's Seamus McCann's fault, and I will forward you on his email address. He's very good at taking the glory in the newspapers and stuff about this race.
Yeah, and the thing I just wanted to also talk to you guys as other people in North Belfast, was it just not sickening the amount of love he got after he was on the podcast?
I berated him for not mentioning the race once in his 4-hour monologue of that podcast.
I don't know if you saw Joe Brawley recently on the Late Late Show with Kielty. It was just like that. We asked Jimmy one question and he just went.
He'll be happy to know that that's our second most listened to episode. So
that's just don't released. Tell me that. God,
yeah.
No, that's just him listening to on repeat.
That's just Jimmy. Just download.
That means we'll have to have him back on, Danny.
Yeah, I'd love to. He was great to chat to. Look, before we sort of close up shop, are there any other races this track season or, you know, in the next sort of half a year that you guys are looking forward to seeing?
This is Connor's event. He is a
track season. Track season looks a bit funny this year in that the Northern Ireland Championships are now in August. So it's going to be a long year for people if they want to go right through to the championships. For Masters, there's the World Championships right at the end of August in Gothenburg, just where you're back from, Danny. So some people will have to make a call as to whether to go hard and early in April, May and June, take a bit of a break and then try and peak for August again. I know that's my intention, is to try and get two track seasons out of 1 year. So the BMC, as I say, in Belfast, the miler meet that John Glover and Lagan Valley are putting on is going to be one for me. I think that falls kind of close in around the Belfast mile that James McElroy was talking about last week. So I think you can mix up a few good road races with a few good track races if you're clever this year. But apart from that, it looks a wee bit sort of disparate in terms of big meets and fast meets. You might
Olympic
need to go
year.
Over to BMC.
Do we know if Annadale are running their meet this year?
Yeah, I've heard that they are. I haven't seen a date for it yet, but it's usually, I think it was June last year. I suppose there aren't that many weekends because I see the Irish Championships are the last weekend in June. European Championships are first weekend in June. That'll have some, obviously, be a number of Irish athletes, you know, aiming for that. But it is a weird season, Connor, as you say, because it's a really long, drawn-out season.
Yeah.
And for people who maybe start at Eamon's meet to try to keep going to the start of August, it's a long time. It's a long time to kind of hold, especially if you're doing things like 800s, to keep that speed and keep that kind of, you know, that focus.
Yeah, definitely. I think some people, I mean, if you're wise about it, you might start like at the 3s and 15s, you know, or start doing a few 400s at the start of the season to build up to an 8 or a 15. Just try and mix it up a bit. Because if you're racing every week or trying to race every week at 8:15, you're going to burn yourself out after about 6 weeks.
Yeah. And I know that John probably goes to sleep every night with a smile on his face, knowing that he's one day closer to the cross country season. So that'll be back before we know it at the end of the year. look, thank you so much,
guys.
Yeah,
if you think about the track finishes in August.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I think that's enough for tonight. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming on the pod. It's been great chatting to you both. And we look forward to having you on in the future, and I wish you all the best for this weekend, especially you, John, having a good race. And hopefully everything goes smoothly.
I'll see you soon.
Cheers, guys.
Ready, guys.
Thanks for the invite. Cheers. Thanks, Danny.
Cheers. Bye. Bye. Bye.